This is the Motley Fool Radio Show with David Gardner. Time Magazine called him one of the world's 100 most powerful and influential people. And if you own a Vanguard fund, then you know his creation. Jack Bogle is the founder and former CEO of the Vanguard Group of Mutual Funds. He's also the author of the new book, The Battle for the Soul of Capitalism. He joins us from his office in Malvern, Pennsylvania. Jack Bogle, welcome back to the Motley Fool Radio Show.
Always good to be with you, David.
Jack, your new book is entitled The Battle for the Soul of Capitalism. Who is doing battle here?
Well, the battle is between the owners and the managers. And we had for years and years a capitalistic system based on trusting and being trusted, in which capital was the property of the owners, and the owners were the beneficiaries of capitalism. They put up the money, they got the rewards. In the latter part of the 20th century, that system was corrupted, I think, David, by a new form, a virulent form of capitalism, manager's capitalism, where all of a sudden, instead of the owners being the focus of the benefits of the system, we had the managers taking far more than their share. Mm. And we said very pervasive. We saw it in corporate America with phony accounting, building up stock prices, earnings guidance always met, stock options. Creating value was supposed to be done by raising the price of your stock. Executives got paid staggering amounts of money, CEOs, for accomplishing, it turns out, almost nothing. And so the owners came into the picture, got the excessive rewards in corporate America, and we've got to do something about that. And if that isn't bad enough, we have another system out there that, is it possible, even more troubled than corporate America. And that, of course, is mutual fund America, where the managers are even more installed in the positions of power than they are in corporate America. The managers are really in total control of these funds, and they're taking management fees and spending them on marketing and things like that to do the shareholders no good and making huge money for delivering returns that are a pale shadow of the returns that our stock market, or for that matter, our bond market, deliver.
You note in your book that the total pay of the average CEO went from 42 times that of the average worker back in 1980 to 280 times that of the average worker in 2004.
Yeah, actually, this year it's even worse. It's up to 430 times.
Mm.
Pretty bad. That information came out just after the book went to press.
Jack, is there a magic number that should be the number, or what is your opinion in general?
Well, 25 years ago, the number was 42 times. So it's gone up tenfold. And if you want to look at it in the sensible way, which is to deflate these numbers for inflation, the cost of living, the average worker is just about exactly where he was, where she was, 25 years ago. They've actually had a real increase in income of 0.3% per year. And in that period, the earnings of the average CEO have gone up seven times over. So 42 times may have been a little on the cheap side, but 100 times, it would seem to me, is pushing it. Nobody knows these things. And I do want to be clear that if they earn it, I don't think there should be any limits on a very successful executive.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is that our executives as a group over this last 25 years, believe this or not, David, have promised in their earnings guidance future earnings averaging 11.5% over that period. They've delivered earnings of 6% growth, and the GDP, the growth of our economy, has been 6.2%. So these geniuses haven't even grown as fast as our economy grows, and for that we're giving them almost 11%, as you see in the book, 11% of corporate earnings.
Hmm. In talking about what you call investing America, you say there's been a rise in the, quote, rent-a-stock industry, end quote. Jack, could you please explain?
Yeah, one problem is when you see, just take a step back, how did it happen that the CEOs got all this money? Well, the directors gave it to them, but why didn't the owners of corporations, of corporate America, do something about it, saying, stop, directors, stop? And that is, we have emerged into a society we don't have owners anymore. We have renters of stocks. The first 15 years I was in this business, all those ancient years ago, like the 50s through the mid-60s, Mutual funds, for example, held the average stock for 6 years, portfolio turnover about 16%. Now the average mutual fund holds a stock, has about 100% turnover, therefore holds an average stock for just 1 year. And it must be obvious that if you're behaving as an owner, you really care deeply about corporate governance, compensation, shareholder rights. And if you're a renter, you couldn't care less. You won't even be holding the stock at that rate at the next annual meeting. You know, Secretary of Treasury and now Harvard President Larry Summers is famous for saying, nobody in all the history of the world, nobody has ever washed a rental car. And to which I would add, and in all the history of the world, it doesn't look like many people, at least seriously, have voted a rented stock.
It is a very telling point, and I know you come to things as an advocate for mutual funds and having created tremendous value in your life for other people by doing so, but might mutual funds in this case be part of the problem? I mean, I assume back in the 1950s and 60s, and maybe this is a naive younger man's assumption, more people were probably buying stock directly themselves and maybe acting more like owners. These days, there are so many mutual funds. As you've pointed out in the past, there are more mutual funds than stocks. We all feel a little disconnected, don't we?
Yes, that's absolutely right. And one thing, one very important trend I talk about in the book, David, is the ownership society, which was talked about, brooded around so much, vanished in 1985. And that is the year at which less stock was owned by direct owners of stocks than by investment institutions, notably pension plans and mutual funds. And in the last 50 years, individual ownership of stock has dropped from 91% of the total to 32%. So we don't have owners. We don't have an ownership society of direct owners anymore. What we have is an agency society where the agents are failing to represent the interests of their principals. And anybody who knows anything about the agency system knows that agents have a duty to represent their principals. That is to say, mutual fund managers have a duty to represent their shareholders, and they're not succeeding in that task. Sometimes I wonder if they're even trying to succeed at that task.
So we're looking at the status quo today, and we're decrying lots of elements. We're not just decrying the pay of managers relative to their average employee, but we're also saying, hey, all the people who are buying the stocks of those companies don't even care because they themselves are just trying to make a buck. And I guess I have to pause here and ask, is there anything really wrong with any of this? I mean, whether the ratio of the average CEO is 100 times what the lowest paid employee is or 12, I mean, shouldn't all of these companies be driven by a profit motive and be trying to maximize their profit, whether they're a fund company or Coca-Cola?
Well, I'd put two very different categories. You know, if you're in the manufacturing business, you know, you want to charge what traffic will bear so you can make a nice return on your own investment. Handling other people's money is a trust responsibility. You have a duty to put the interest of your beneficiaries first. If you want to look at mutual funds, or if anybody wants to look at mutual funds, as just another commercial enterprise out there to make all the money it can in its own capital, well, fine. But that's not the way that an intelligent investor is going to go. He's going to say, I want my trustee to look after me, as trustees have been doing under the common law going back, oh, 300 or 400 years. The trustee has a responsibility. And when you change from a stewardship to salesmanship, you've set back the investor. The way to deal with it is, well, two things. One, we certainly need to give the funds a better body, to have more independent directors, to have an independent chairman. To have the fund. This is the way Vanguard began, to separate from the management company. So decisions are being made in the interest of fund shareholders. That's going to be time and coming. But what we also have to do is get investors to wake up and see the light. You know, Plato wrote about this. And, you know, get out there and see what reality is. And in the cave, he wrote, you know, you come out and see the real light, which is what I'm telling you, having been in this room with a flame in the front that you think is the real light. Mutual fund investors have to wake up. They've got to think long-term instead of short-term. They've got to realize how terribly important low-cost and high tax efficiency are. Realize the importance of diversification, and realize, very importantly, that they get in their own way. You know, expenses, taxes, and other and investment costs are bad enough load on the fund investors' back, but they are also their own worst enemies. What are they buying? The fund that did best yesterday. It doesn't happen again tomorrow. Fund investors cost themselves actually more by buying the wrong funds than they do in overpaying for those that they buy. So we've got to wake up the fund investor as well.
Mm. Jack, as you know, we at The Motley Fool have been big Jack Bogle fans from the get-go, and really do, as you're doing, point people toward an index fund as the first and, for many people, the best answer for their long-term investment needs. And then the only question becomes, what are you indexing? But if there's one point that perhaps we've disagreed on over the years, and our business model is sort of predicated on this, so I think I have to continue to disagree. I'm just curious where your party line is these days. We do think that individuals can beat the stock market through patience, probably foremost, through locating good managers, and for finding business models that have natural moats built around them from competition. And so we feel as if there are more people out there than, let's say, just Warren Buffett or, let's say, just Peter Lynch, two names that are frequently thrown out. And I know you've said in the past that it's like a needle in a haystack finding somebody who can beat the market over the course of the long term. But do you really believe that?
Well, the odds, we know from history and from mathematics, the relentless rules of arithmetic, are hugely against you. Does that mean you shouldn't try? I don't see any reason with respect to a modest portion of your investments that you can't have. I mean, I would call it, I know what to do with serious money, bond index funds and stock index funds. You ought to have a little fun so you can have a funny money account and see how you do. And I really think there's nothing the matter with that. But just be clear that the odds against you are terrible. And the systems, the logic of finding tomorrow's winners is really difficult. But as everybody knows, if you want the best possible signal for a fund that will be above average in the next 10 years, go to the funds that have the lowest cost. And I can guarantee you that lowest cost quartile, I can't tell you which funds, but that quartile will outperform the highest cost quartile by probably, on a risk-adjusted basis, 3.5% a year. That's what the past shows, no matter when you look at it. So just be careful. Keep a little humility. Be a little bit introspective. And, have some intelligent fun. But realize that, as a group, investors are all average. It's like those kids, except for those kids out of Wobegon, Lake Wobegon, I guess everybody is. Before costs. And below average after cost. The odds are against you. Not that you can't do it, but you're playing difficult odds.
Jack Bogle, let's close as we always have in the past with our game Buy, Sell, or Hold. I'll be throwing out things happening in our world at large and ask you if they were stocks or, we'll say, mutual funds, would you be buying, selling, or holding today? And a sentence or two about why. You ready?
Yes.
Okay. We talked about it earlier in our show. Buy, sell, or hold today. The idea that there's a bubble in our housing market, buy, sell, or hold.
I would buy that. It looks like housing prices, or trees, if you will, can grow to the sky. And I've never seen a tree that actually grows to the sky.
Before it gets chopped down and made it into a new house.
Exactly.
There's been a lot of that.
That's pretty good.
Next one for you. Buy, sell, or hold the saying, a leopard can't change his spots.
I'd say probably buy that, only on the evidence that so few leopards do that it's a good general principle, and if one does, that won't change the principle.
Very well put. Finally, Jack, we've talked about some of the problems in the world. Buy, sell, or hold idealism.
Buy. I love idealism. I am more idealistic than I was when I wrote that idealistic college thesis at Princeton University in 1951. And my idealism gets a little bit better or worse, as the case may be. It gets more intense every day. And I think if we can just get the young citizens coming into the workforce at colleges and business schools, the future leaders of America, not to give up on us in this mess that I describe in my book, the opportunity of a lifetime is a system that we've got here in capitalism, the soul of capitalism, if you will. It's there to be fixed, and my book is dedicated to my 12 grandchildren, and I ask them to take on the responsibility along with the other members of their young generation.
Mm. Idealism is good for the soul. I think it was Robert Frost who put on his gravestone, in fact, I had a lover's quarrel with the world, and that has been a lifelong endeavor for Jack Bogle. We can't wait to have him on again. His book is The Battle for the Soul of Capitalism, How the Financial System Undermined Social Ideals, Damaged Trust in the Markets, Robbed Investors of Trillions, and What to Do About It. Jack Bogle, thanks for joining us again on the Motley Fool Radio Show.
Great to be with you, David, and good luck to you all.
Something on this week's show that you liked, something that you didn't like, or maybe something that you were totally ambivalent about? Well, we want to hear from you. The number's 866-NPR-FOOL, and we welcome all of your comments, suggestions, and ideas on our show. Again, that number is 866-NPR-FOOL.